So we do best.
I'm going to assume I'm ready. Welcome to Beer Field. I am Ad Hoc BFF, Chris Hopper, courtesy of Blowing Out Your Eardrums, joined by Thury BFF, Dan Thury.
For those of you that are wondering, we are doing the NFC recap. We did the AFC recap last week.
Stealing my thunder. Also, for those of you that are wondering, at Beerfield FF on Twitter, Beerfield Fantasy Football on YouTube, at Hot BFF, at Thury BFF, and I think that basically covers it. Yeah, it's been a week for both of us, so this is going to be, I'll be honest with you, this is going to be a cluster. It's a live show, and this is going to be a lot of effort. Let's do it live. I had my one stat of the year last week, so there was no prep that went into this week. So we're just going to go with it. Before we do that, though, as always, I guess we're just going to cut to the chase here. Let's go ahead and talk about what we're drinking, because that's what we do on this show. We drink, we talk about stuff.
That's right.
What's fueling Beer Field?
Dan, what are we drinking?
I am drinking Hubbard's Cave Cinnamon Ice Mocha. This is a stout. They scratched out Imperial, so it's just a base stout. Stout with cinnamon, chocolate, coffee, lactose, and vanilla beans. This is part of their Ice Mocha series that they've started. And this one, they just add cinnamon to it. I believe it's like 6%. I don't think it's super. It doesn't say on here. You motherfuckers.
All right, I am drinking Royal
6%.
Good to know. Sorry, didn't mean to step on you.
No, you're good.
So that's not Imperial. That's why they crossed out Imperial. That's just stout.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I am drinking Royal Rush from Hysteria Brewing Company. This is an Imperial Coffee Cake Porter. They don't tell you what's in this, so I'm guessing it's cinnamon and coffee, and we'll see what else. So it checks in at 9%. No, 8%. Sorry, so it technically is an Imperial Porter. So, yeah, we'll give you a full review at some point through the show. Let's go ahead. I'm going to play a drop so I can actually pull up the news. Let's get into the news.
News.
Hey, before we do that, let's just take a big old drink, because I feel like we're both a little rigid right now. I think we need to get a little more loosey-goosey here before we get into the news. Like, we got to loosen this thing up a little bit.
Yeah, we do.
All right. Cool. So there's going to be a lot of people in the news story that we don't want to talk about, and one I definitely do want to talk about.
yeah, there is.
So I'm literally – this is going to be really one of Hop, read you Roto Edge or NBC Sports Edge or whatever, but just the things that matter. Trevor Lawrence, non-throwing shoulder, won't be full speed ahead for rookie minicamp. That's usually okay. Non-throwing shoulder, wouldn't be worried about that. There will be some things that don't matter here as I try to fill dead air, by the way. Kelvin Benjamin's going to try out for the Giants next weekend. They need help, I guess.
Yeah, they need to add, I mean, I guess they need a new, you know, a backup tight end, so.
Yep. Deshaun Hamilton was released. There's a name, but, you know, Broncos not really needing him at this point.
He really hated Game of Thrones. That was the true downfall.
Bears getting off on the right foot here with Matt Nagy not being around for rookie minicamp. COVID-19, he'll be virtual.
Fantastic.
A lot of rookie signings. Packers signed Blake Bortles, formerly of the Rams, to a one-year contract. We'll pause here for a second. So with the Aaron Rodgers stuff going on, Bortles gives them a third first-round pick at quarterback. The Packers typically do carry three QBs, and I'd imagine he's got to be favored to beat out Jordan Love. Just given
I would think his so.
Talent and experience.
Sorry, I'm trying to look up the contract. It's not vet minimum. I want to say it was like it was a little over $3 million. So it's not. It's not like a.
No, it truly is a 1 year come in and be our backup and our insurance policy deal. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's people out there that are trying to make it seem more than what it is. The old, well, you know, they brought in Bortles, they paid him a little more extra money. It's my tip the hat to, you know, to Rodgers being traded or.
And Nathaniel Hackett's the OC there, who was his OC in Jacksonville when they went to the AFC title game. So, familiarity there, too.
It's going to be a lot of just.
Wait and see what happens with Rodgers, really.
Well, that and just if he does play, hand the football off to.
You shut your mouth. If Blake Bortles gets in there, it's going to be an improvement over Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be chucking it up to Devontae Adams. You're going to get
great.
All sorts of love there. Amari Rodgers is going to be
best receiver in football.
I mean, pretty much. Alan Lazard, absolutely going to go to the moon there. I mean, Blake Bortles is the best thing that could happen to a Packers team. They're in turmoil. Blake Bortles is a glue guy in the locker room. I have nothing to back that up. That's just the narrative I want to spin. So,
I mean, let's be real.
Immediately makes the Packers a better football team.
I think since, like, I don't know, what is it, 2010? Blake Bortles, only one playoff loss. Aaron Rodgers, multiple playoff losses. Records in conference championship games. How many losses? Only one for Bortles, three for Rodgers. I'm just saying the stats are backing up. The wins are backing up Bortles. I'm not saying.
I bet Rodgers has more playoff turnovers than Blake Bortles, too. I mean, just saying, like, you can't get to the big game and choke. You got a Blake Bortles in.
I'm not saying. Upgrade.
It is an upgrade. In all seriousness, for those of you that know me, though, this does hurt my heart a little bit as a Bears fan because Bortles is on the Packers, and I'm torn as to what to do. I think my love for Bortles probably outweighs my hate for the Packers. As a Bears fan, that should tell you about how I feel about Blake Bortles, if you didn't know already.
This is so insane. Like, I wonder if Rodgers makes it all the way to the start of the season and actually plays, if they just end up cutting Bortles anyways. Like, I think Bortles might actually truly be there.
He might be the backup.
Just to make sure that they have a quarterback ready to go if Jordan Love sucks and Rodgers does actually move on. I think that's the main reason why. Otherwise, there's no need. Like, Rodgers doesn't get hurt. I mean, he does, but I don't know. I just don't want to think of Blake Bortles on Green Bay. It just kind of hurts.
It does hurt. I do think he is at least. If Jordan Love hasn't progressed from where Jordan Love was when he was drafted, Blake Bortles has got to be a favorite to back up Rodgers.
Yeah, man, can you imagine just if they replace Jordan Love in year two? Like, that's a backup.
Well, I mean, it won't be replaced. He'll just be where he was last year, inactive and not on the roster for most games.
I know, but that looks so bad. Like, your team has zero confidence in you as a backup. Like, no. Anyways, I just love shitting on that draft class even more.
Yeah, schedule's released. Not going to go into that. There's literally an entry here for every team's first game. I don't know why. Don't care.
Oh, Penny Sewell, he tested positive for COVID. He's going to miss rookie minicamp.
He'll be fine. Colts could be among potential trade partners for Julio Jones. That's mildly interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, make a run at it with Julio and T.Y.
I'm not really, I mean, I guess. I just don't see Atlanta trading Julio.
Aaron Rodgers update on the side of Blake Bortles, by the way. Ian Rappaport reports the Packers made a significant long-term contract extension offer to Aaron Rodgers. There's been some engagement from Rodgers and his agents. Rappaport said adding the Packers still have zero plans whatsoever to trade their franchise quarterback. Relationship between Rodgers and the team remains fraught at best, with some in Rodgers' circle believing he'll dig in and hold out until Green Bay trades him. Broncos have reportedly pieced together trade proposals in hopes of landing Rodgers should the Packers give in over the next couple weeks. First off, do you know what that would do to my heart if Drew Locke and Blake Bortles both went to the Packers?
I would give you a very nice, funny chuckle, because I think that'll be the worst that could happen to your heart. Outside of like Drew Locke going there, Blake Bortles going there, Cooper Kupp being traded there.
Right.
And like, yeah, it just, I'm trying to think who else. Those are like your three main bays. Like, I guess Zach Wilson, but.
Oh, we're going to get to another one here. Jaguars signed Tim Tebow to play tight end.
God.
If he makes the roster, and he has a shot at making this roster because he has played personal protector, he will play special teams, he can potentially be an emergency quarterback, which keeps them from having to have a third string active, or at least anywhere other than the practice squad. I mean, Tim Tebow's a weapon, first and foremost. You know,
at this point in his career, like, he has,
well, we don't
like
know.
8 years. We have no clue what he is at this
but
point.
He also doesn't have that mileage on his body, and it's not like he's been sitting at home doing nothing. He has been at least in pro sports to some level.
I feel like this is just Jacksonville just trying to drum up some sort of.
Well, so is signing Urban Meyer. Let's get fans in the stadium.
God,
but
it's just, this feels such like. He's 32 years old, 33 years old. Like, do we really think.
He doesn't have the mileage on his body.
Well, I'm not talking about that. Like, some undrafted free agent, like some kid who wants to, like, work for his dream, and you give it to the fucking Tim Tebow, who's coming off of ESPN and failing in the.
Maybe that kid should have. Maybe that kid should have Jesus on his side, first and foremost. Maybe you should be able to do everything Tim Tebow can do. He can play quarterback. He can play fullback. He's going to be able to play tight end. He can play special teams.
Oh, God.
I mean,
I don't even think he could.
He's like, a proven runner. He's a weapon. And, I mean, he's a weapon in the same way Amari Rodgers is a weapon. Except he's a lot bigger. But
I was going to say, at least Tebow's Amari Rodgers is fucking big for his size.
He's thick.
Tebow is gigantic.
He's thick. Tim Tebow is not going to be fantasy relevant, but damn it, he could be NFL relevant. That's all I'm saying.
So many people are going to care enough for me.
So many people are going to hate this episode because it's involved mostly Blake Bortles and Tim Tebow. So in the first 15 minutes.
I mean, if they've been listening to this show long enough, A, bless your fucking heart, and B, like,
you expect it.
What do you really expect from us at this point?
Oh, good. Packers GM Brian Gutekunst says Jordan Love has a long way to go in his development. So mark that down. Blake Bortles is the backup.
God, Jesus Christ. It makes me happy because it continues the point of how fucking bad that draft class was last year. And how bad that draft pick in hindsight really was anyways. I mean, we are not a pro Jordan Love show.
No.
Jordan Love wants to listen to this podcast and use our sound bites as motivation to still suck. Boy, go ahead. Just good luck, buddy.
Stephon Diggs played through a torn oblique during the Bills' 2020 postseason. What a badass.
I love Stephon Diggs. He likes to throw shade, but, man, I don't care. That dude can say a lot of shit. He gave me Minneapolis Miracle, and the Vikings did him dirty by never actually wanting to, you know, put him as a big focus in their offense. It's just,
well, when you got Thielen, you can't just be.
It's
but,
fucking insane. Now still.
Kerryon Johnson claimed by the Eagles from the Lions. Immediate Miles Sanders backup.
So let's look at Philadelphia's backfield. We have Miles Sanders, we have Jordan Howard, we have Kenneth Gainwell, Boston Scott, and now Kerryon Johnson.
Okay, rank them.
Miles Sanders, Kenneth Gainwell, Kerryon Johnson. I don't think Jordan Howard makes the roster.
I don't think he does either. I don't think Boston Scott makes the roster with the other two in there.
I think Boston Scott does his special teams. I think that'll
virtually
be his only role. And that's if they don't practice squad Gainwell. That's if they don't.
Well, and I don't think they would, right? Gainwell's a better Boston Scott in a lot of ways. So
I mean, Gainwell is a better everything besides Miles Sanders. He's just not the size to play goal line back, but I mean,
now, Kerryon Johnson's a bigger back, and let's not forget, when Johnson's generally healthy, he's been successful. You know, last year was kind of a shit show in Detroit. You had whatever they were doing with Adrian Peterson. They brought in DeAndre Swift. A lot of inefficiency in Detroit anyway. But
I mean, what we do know is that,
he's not going to be a lead back.
He's never healthy, and he's just okay. Like, that back, and plus, you have Jalen Hurts, who...
He's going to run a lot
historically,
anyway.
Historically, mobile quarterbacks don't dink and dunk it off to their running backs because they can just
run themselves. Right.
So
the other thing that it comes down to also is that three of those guys are very good pass catching backs in Sanders, Johnson, and Gainwell. So.
Sanders was pretty fucking, like, from an efficiency standpoint, Sanders was horrible last year.
Which, given his pedigree, he shouldn't be.
Yeah, which, like, points to they take Gainwell and they bring in Kerryon. Like, Kerryon, I think, is the true backup to Sanders. He's just a worse Sanders.
I think Gainwell, though, they drafted him. I'm going back here a little bit, but I mean, you can easily see a role for Gainwell as well that makes
easily.
Him relevant. Darren Sproles type role.
He is the best pass catching back in this backfield that I don't think is particularly close.
So we'll have to see how that shakes out. We'll have more assessment on that through training camp. I'm not ready to say right now that Kerryon Johnson's a dart throw is a possible flex play in some weeks. I'm not even going to say week to week. We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Jets released Josh Doctson. D.D. Westbrook's a free agent. I forgot that.
Yeah, he's... There's been some rumors of Minnesota trying to bring him in.
That'd be interesting. They do need a third.
Yeah, that's wide open. We'll talk about that when we get to the draft, Doc.
Jeff Driscoll could visit the Cowboys Friday. Nobody cares. Okay, cool. I covered it all.
Love it.
Awesome. That was actually pretty efficient for doing no prep on that whatsoever. Let's get to some of these NFC drafts. Dan, pick a division. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the North. Let's go with our teams.
All right, starting with the North, that means the first team up is Chicago, and obviously they got the steal in the draft, the 111, drafting Justin Fields. You look at what Chicago needed, and there were a lot of things. They have an aging pass rush, which didn't get addressed at all. They have a need at quarterback, as they signed Andy Dalton as just kind of a bridge piece. They had some definite needs on the offensive line, is they'd released a couple of linemen and really were kind of piecemeal by the end of the year. They needed depth at running back. They needed really a wide receiver other than Allen Robinson. Darnell Mooney, good field stretcher. You could have made an argument for that. And a cornerback to replace Kyle Fuller. First off, let's start with Justin Fields. I'll start, and then Dan, you can give your stance here, but hell of a pick by the Bears to go out and get Justin Fields. They moved up, but not a lot. My issue with the Bears moving up for a quarterback was I didn't want them to wager the future for when Ryan Pace gets fired, and then Ryan Pace comes out and has a good draft. I don't really know what to make of that, but moving up to get Justin Fields was a hell of a move outside of the top 10 picks. I've knocked a bit on Fields as far as his processing and stuff like that, but he was still my third quarterback in this draft class. And I personally love the athleticism. He's going to be more dynamic than anything the Bears have had in the past. He definitely has the arm talent. it's going to be a matter of how does the processing speed and the decision making translate. And at the worst case scenario, if it doesn't, you still have a lot of floor in the legs. You have a lot of playmaking ability there as well. So I love what they did. I love them going out and making this draft pick. I was not disappointed by this at all.
So for those of you that have listened to the show long enough, know my stance on Justin Fields. I was obviously pounding the table for Minnesota to try to make a trade up. Chicago was able to make what I would assume a little more aggressive offer. They're six mm-hmm. picks behind Minnesota, so they had to. And New York being able to get, you know, two firsts, including the 20th, just a swap, and then two fourth-round picks within the next 2 years of the draft class is a fantastic deal. They fucked up the 20th overall pick, but we'll get to that later. This was the best pick in the first round, hands down.
Yes. A lot of people use this pick to justify that they have the best draft. I don't necessarily, and their second round pick in Tevin Jenkins, I don't necessarily agree with that. Removed from it, looking from the whole of it, but this was the best value in the first round for sure.
Yeah. Like, this is, a lot of people had, you know, Justin Fields as a top two quarterback in this class. I mean, a lot of people had him at least as a top three pick. Like, you can make arguments for what San Fran did, from what New York did. The Bears got the best value, and it's not even close.
Right. Where San Francisco and New York may have had better overall drafts, the first-round pick value goes to the Bears.
Well, I mean, yeah. They didn't have the best draft within their, you know, division. But
no, they didn't.
They still had a strong – they just showed that they're willing, and again, now willing to tether their future to a rookie quarterback. Thankfully, this one, I feel, is a lot better prepared than what they got in 2017. So
yeah.
The question really is, and I have to ask you as a Bears fan, is this enough for Ryan Pace, for just Ryan Pace, because this is obviously his decision, to get a new contract with the Bears?
I don't think Justin Fields is going to make or break that by himself. I don't think that it's enough. So I don't think this move solely is enough to make that happen. I think that for Ryan Pace to save his job, there has to be enough performance to prove that releasing Kyle Fuller wasn't a mistake. There has to be enough shown from the wide receiver core. Darnell Mooney has to progress, and they have to find some solution behind Allen Robinson. I think that this team has to be a playoff team for Ryan Pace to save his job. And I don't know that Justin Fields in his rookie year or this singular draft pick makes that happen. If the return of Tariq Cohen, if Tevin Jenkins, if that combination propels the Bears to a wild card spot, then yeah, I think it's a good enough retooling to do it. And that's not a knock on Justin Fields. That's not a knock on what Pace did here. That's just looking at the overall package of what Ryan Pace has done. This is his second shot as a quarter to get a franchise quarterback, and most GMs don't get that. So you get one, and if you screw it up, you're usually gone. So the fact that he got a second one, first off, is rare. But I don't think that alone is going to be enough to save him. Question. Go ahead.
What about Nagy then? Because I think Nagy is now safer than Pace with this pick. Because you don't want to have any real sort of shakeup with now drafting a quarterback that you were again now trying to make the face of the franchise.
That's why I was against drafting a quarterback in the first place with what I consider to be a lame duck regime. I disagree that Nagy is safer than Pace because I see a scenario where Nagy could be the fall guy if this doesn't pan out. It's not so like
Doug Peterson in Philadelphia.
Yes, it's not and Howie Roseman getting to keep his job even though the roster was a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
It's one of those things to where the Bears are not known for good coaching and personnel decisions. And I could very easily see if this team misses that they do say, Ryan Pace did enough in the draft where you should have won more games. And with giving you a number one wide receiver, a decent running back tandem, a solid field stretcher, a good defense, and not only a competent bridge veteran quarterback, but a high upside rookie quarterback to where he's gone, I don't see teams very often anymore bring in a GM and keep the coaching infrastructure in place. They're usually tied to each other. You do see coaches go and GMs stay. So I don't agree that Nagy's safer than Pace. As far as this being enough to save Nagy's job, it's kind of the same answer. You've been given the tools, so what do you do with the tools that you have? Because, you know, last year I think you underperformed with the tools that you had, and I think the Nick Foles experiment in the middle of the season was a mistake and probably cost you a couple wins. So, especially given how Trubisky looked, not great, but given how Trubisky looked after he got reinserted, right?
Yeah.
He was definitely better after the benching / shoulder injury / whatever it was. And a lot of the problems that I've seen watching Bears games is the play calling was unimaginative. You didn't find ways to position people to be successful. And it was a lot of dink, dunk, check down, try to get people to get yards after the catch. And then you'd get behind in games, and then you'd start pushing the ball, and the offense would start to look confident. And then Trubisky would do something boneheaded or whatever. But the offense would at least just start to look competent and confident. But it was usually the second half of games when that happened. And that all falls back on the coach and the game planning.
Sure.
And how that works. So, question for you, when does Justin Fields start? Because it's not a matter of if to me, even the season. It's win.
I think he'll start. I think he starts week one. I honestly look at this the way that how like Seattle 2012, they draft Russell Wilson, obviously third round, so different situation in terms of expectations to begin. And the same year that they brought in Matt Flynn, a bigger contract situation for Flynn is why it was a little bit more surprising when Wilson beat him out in preseason. But we're going to have that this year, despite one less game. Now with the push to 17-game season, I do think that Fields plays week one because I do believe that Pace and Nagy have to, like in the back of their mind, have to know and look at and say, Justin Fields gives us the best chance to win, even over Andy Dalton, week one. That would, to me, would be the best decision. If that's correct, we'll see. But I do believe Justin Fields is a week one starter.
So you're making a mistake in your take. You're applying,
and assuming that Pace and Nagy will make the right decision.
You're applying logic to decisions that Pace and Nagy make.
Right, I know.
Or at least logic that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that they are going to do the whole, I think this is closer to going into Trubisky. I think this is going to be the whole, he's the starter, Dalton's the starter, we told him he's the starter, he's going to get a chance. It's going to be Tyrod Taylor's career, basically, where you're going to get Fields as a starter to me by week four. I think that the Bears come out 1-2 and struggle fuck their way to one win, or 1-3. They'll call it week five. And they make a quarterback change. I think Dalton struggles.
Okay.
Or Dalton is competent, but the rest of the team isn't competent enough to make Dalton's game manager hold up because the defense is aging. They didn't do anything to address the pass rush, and they got rid of their best cornerback. So, you know, maybe Dalton doesn't shit the bed entirely, but he's not a game changer, and neither is the defense anymore.
Yeah, I just see the pressure enough from the fans, especially if Dalton does play in week one. I got to assume that they made the logical pick and feels so that they can make the logical decision to play in week one.
See, and I got to assume that if you mention pressure for the fans have been calling for Matt Nagy to not play call for 3 years, and he finally gave it up in the middle of last year and then took it back in the offseason. So,
I will never forgive Chicago if they fucking ruin Justin Fields. I just want you to know that.
I don't think they'll ruin him, but they're definitely going to fuck up the beginning.
I will not forgive the city.
Tevin Jenkins, Oklahoma State offensive tackle, Larry Borum. So they didn't have a pick rounds 3 and 4 because of the trading they did. They came up to get Tevin Jenkins. They needed a tackle. I felt like that was a good pick and another good move up by the Bears. Khalil Herbert later on. We didn't talk a lot about him leading up to the draft process, but there was this tier of running backs in a very shallow class that I felt like were, and I'm not the only one that gave Khalil Herbert a little bit of love, and having any draft capital, given what happened to running backs this year, at least says there's a chance. We saw last year with Tariq Cohen out, who's a different type of animal, there was no depth behind David Montgomery at all. It was Ryan Nall and Cordarrelle Patterson that they tried to use. They had to go get depth. If something happens to David Montgomery, Tariq Cohen is not stepping up and taking all of those rushing snaps. Khalil Herbert's a 5'9", 210-pound back with good burst, solid vision, a good stiff arm, good balance, consistent ability to get to the second level, that also does some kick returning, which is another area that they needed help after Cordarrelle Patterson walked. He is 23. He doesn't have breakaway speed. Doesn't change direction well, which is fine. You have Tariq Cohen. You don't need another back to be super agile. You need a back that can spell David Montgomery between the tackles. You know, it wasn't really utilized in the receiving game. What I'm saying is Herbert's a depth piece, but he's a depth piece that they desperately needed. And I think he does make the roster.
He's the name to know if anything were to happen to David Montgomery.
He's pink fuzzy handcuffs.
Yeah, like he's, yeah, like it's like,
because Cohen will still get
fuzzy handcuffs.
Because Cohen will still get more touches, but even if something happens to Montgomery, Cohen's still going to get more touches, but Herbert will get short yardage and goal line.
Herbert will get a significant enough amount of snap and touch, potential touch volume
to be flex-worthy if something like that.
Flex-worthy in plus matchups.
And if you're looking late in your rookie draft for a running back, again, name to know if something does happen, because there is a path to trade value. Because it's not because of Khalil Herbert as a prospect, it's because it's a super thin running back room.
This is why I think this is their third, this might even be their second best pick, because he should make the roster, he should make special teams, which is important, because that's how a guy like him, for fantasy purposes, remains fantasy relevant in his rookie year despite shitty.
He'll be competing with Damian Williams for that third running back role, basically.
Damian Williams won't make that fucking roster. And I both know he sucked. The only reason why we debated about it so long
was because of the team he was on.
It's because he was in Kansas City and he was getting usage and he was good enough to be relevant.
Daz Newsome is Riley Ridley all over again.
He's practice squad.
There's nothing else really to talk about here. There's nothing in their UDFAs. Bears, solid draft, very top-heavy draft, with the exception of Khalil Herbert, which I thought was a little bit lower down, a good pick.
Yep.
For a six-round pick. Because at six-rounder, you're just hoping you get some use out of them on a roster.
Exactly.
On to Green Bay.
Detroit.
On to Detroit. Because D comes before G the way that we do math. All right. So, Detroit, another team with a lot of needs. We'll get to Amon-Ra St. Brown in a minute, because I think that's a relevant pick given where he landed, even as a fourth rounder. Sewell.
It was the second best pick they could have made. I would have preferred Justin Fields. Yes. You always want to take franchise quarterback over franchise tackle.
Especially when Jared Goff is what you're relying on right now. But if you're going to roll with Jared Goff, you got to protect Jared Goff, and that's what they did.
Yeah, and it's not even just protecting Goff. This is them building from the trenches.
It's kind of what Miami did.
It's what Miami did. It's what Jacksonville has been doing. It's if you can't get a franchise quarterback in a draft, it's building your lines up to protect even just mediocre guys. Goff is a sneaky value in even redraft leagues because he'll at least be protected well.
Yeah, the weapons are what concern you with Goff, and we'll get to that here in a minute.
He's going to be so dirt cheap that even, like...
Yeah.
That's where that is.
He's a better super flex value.
For sure.
And we'll get to weapons here when we get to St. Brown. But you're right about them wanting to build in the trenches, because you look at what they did rounds two and round three, they're both defensive tackles.
Yep.
So they are building trenches out, because this is a team that has needs literally everywhere but running back and tight end. So definitely building trenches out. They did take a cornerback in round three. round three, you expect average production. So let's get to Amon-Ra St. Brown. St. Brown, to me, was one of the better slot receivers available in this class, and he does have good size. For the slot, he's not hyper-athletic, but he is the type of solid route runner, reliable pass catcher that can absolutely make a difference. Especially, he's Jared Goff's Cooper Kupp. He's not saying he's as good as Cooper Kupp, because I don't think he is. But when you land on a roster where right now this is your depth chart, Khalif Raymond, Tyrell Williams, Breshad Perriman, Victor Bolden, Quintez Cephas. And we'll get to a college free agent they signed, too, that I think could be very, very good. St. Brown with draft capital literally lands in a spot where he could be the wide receiver one on this team. And it's not going to be a pretty wide receiver one on this team. But at the end of the year, when we look at receptions and yardage, he could be a flex play because this is a team that's going to play from behind. They're going to have to throw the football, and there is literally no freaking body else on that wide receiver core.
He's in one of the better spots to at least see
volume
return value. You know, from where he is, you and I both know he's never a future number one receiver. He'll be one. I think he has a chance to be one this year.
Yeah,
because Breshad Perriman can't stay healthy.
He's not going to be a wide receiver one. Don't get it confused. He could be the wide receiver one on his team.
A team's number one. Yeah,
he's at best a three, probably.
Yeah, and I think for fantasy wise, I agree. I think his ceiling's probably a low two, and that's if everything kind of plays out right. This team's going to be playing from behind a lot, but the offense is still going to likely go through Hockenson and Swift. When Amon-Ra, at least he plays the underneath intermediate slot role. He's that slot possession receiver.
Yep.
And I think you make the right, you know, the right comparison into what, you know, Kupp was for Goff. And I think that's what, a mixture of what
he just doesn't have
Hockenson
the
and Kupp was, or it's a mixture of what Hawk and what potentially Brown will be for Goff in Detroit.
Yeah, he just doesn't have the athleticism. I even said in my film write up on him that he profiles as a top 24 to 36 wide receiver is pretty much his ceiling, but his floor is not much lower than that either. That's just where he sits. He plays slotting outside. He has some good nuances to his route running, good length, high motor guy. Even without the ball in his hands, he blocks well. Like, he's a good football player. He really is. He just doesn't have the athletic profile to come out and light the world on fire. Now, we'll look at the rest of that, and then there's a college free agent they picked up that I do want to talk about, given their thinness at wide receiver. So they only drafted St. Brown. It's the only wide receiver they drafted. Jamar Jefferson went 7th round. We can put that to bed. And really, on this team, you're going to put it to bed anyway. With they signed Jamal Williams. They brought in DeAndre Swift. Those are clearly their 1 and 2. You're going to have Jamar Jefferson, Rakeem Boyd, Dedrick Mills fighting it out for the third spot. The guy that I want to talk about here, though, is Jonathan Adams. So, no draft capital, which sucks. Jonathan Adams is a highlight reel of a contested catch guy, though. Like, holy hell was he a highlight reel of a contested catch guy. He turned 50-50 balls into 60-40 balls. I thought he was probably the best contested catch guy in the draft. He had really good body control and ball tracking. He has he's 6'2", 210, solid frame. He plays very physical and does have the ability to separate and win. Spectacular contested catch guy. Definitely some drops. Not a lot of speed. Didn't athletically profile great. He is 22 coming in, which is not super old, but it's still upper echelon where you want somebody to be. Not really declare, and obviously no draft capital. But again, this is a wide receiver core where right now Tyrell Williams and Khalif Raymond are penciled in as your top two.
You gotta hope that he can make the roster.
Yes, and if he does, then this is an Alan Lazard type of situation where this is a guy that could eventually crack into, not every week, not an end of season, but a week in, week out also type of flex play that definitely has some value and some a little bit of boom to them, honestly. But the first step is make the roster. When we look at UDFAs you're looking for, you're saying there's a chance. And I'm saying that on this roster, with this wide receiver depth, with the way that he looked in college, there's absolutely a chance for Jonathan Adams to crack in and have some value at some point.
It's the best depth chart to do it in. So if he's going to, it's going to be here.
Right. And if you can't hear it, then yeah, we can put that narrative to bed. It's not something I'm going to be able to hold down to.
Yeah.
I honestly think that by the end of the year, St. Brown, Cephas, and Jonathan Adams are your top three wide receivers here. What that means in terms of fantasy, I don't know. Lions are probably going to be trash. Probably going to be a lot more DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson. But, again, these names, right now, outside of the two guys I just talked about, Breshad Perriman, Terrell Williams, Khalif Raymond, Victor Bolden, Quintez Cephas did flash a bit last year, not shitting on him too much, Damian Ratley, Tom Kennedy, whoever that is, John Atkins, Geronimo Allison's still there, maybe this is finally the year of Geronimo.
No.
So, I have no love for Sherrod or Javon McKinley, who are the other two UDFAs they drafted, so... Yeah. They got to catch lightning in a bottle. Jonathan Adams is, to me, the closest thing they're going to get to doing that with these UDFAs. Green Bay?
Green Bay.
Or do you have anything else on Detroit?
No. Okay. No, let's...
Okay. On to Green Bay. So, they kind of screwed this up a little bit. Again.
A lot of bit.
Again. But... Eric Stokes, Georgia cornerback, a lot of length. They did need a cornerback, so they did draft a position in need. But again, not the wide receiver everybody's been pounding the table for. And Stokes did not necessarily profile as he's a high upside guy that profiled as far from a sure thing. So, little bit of a question mark there, I think. I mean, look, they've got a great number one corner. But
this is a team that just keeps continuously taking shots on corners
mm-hmm.
and defensive backs every year with high value picks and hitting it on just one.
Which was Jair Alexander, because Kevin King has not been good. And, yeah. So... Not a whole lot else to say there. I mean, he's an upside guy that has some length, and that's it. Did take a center out of Ohio State in Josh Myers. They did need some line help after they let a couple linemen go. And they did take, in the third round, Amari Rodgers. And Amari Rodgers is a guy that Bierfield is very fond of. He's not going to threaten Lazard or Davante Adams. But what he is going to do is he gives you a weapon. To me, Rodgers is kind of better Curtis Samuel. He's a guy that can line up in the backfield, that is highly athletic, that is a good pass catcher, that is very explosive, that is a solid route runner, that great after the catch, good body control, good speed. He's built like a running back at 5'9", 212, does some video game-like catches and just athleticism in general. He's one of my favorite wide receivers. It's just a matter of how inventive can they get for Amari Rodgers.
And that's where the biggest concern is. So third round draft capital, he's going to make the roster. He'll likely see the field in three receiver sets. I agree. He's not going to usurp Lazard. Rodgers will play out of the slot. He'll play close to the line of scrimmage. He'll be a guy that if they try to get him work in the open field, he'll do a lot of hay with it. And as much as I love the potential, even with Aaron Rodgers, if Rodgers does stay for the extra year, it's just it doesn't feel like it's good enough for me to get that excited. I love Amari Rodgers. the 70 special teams touches throughout his career is fantastic. He should see the field immediately and at least see potential, you know, production right away in terms of special teams. It's just, how is he going to usurp Lazard for number two receiving production? And this is battling Davante Adams with the large target share that he'll command. You know, Aaron Jones should get his share of the pie. You have Robert Tonyan, who Rodgers absolutely loves, and then Lazard. So while Amari Rodgers' day two draft capital is great, there's just a lot of unknown here. A lot of unknown. And that's if Aaron Rodgers stays and the efficiency's there and the volume's there. If he leaves and Jordan Love's the starter or Blake Bortles is the starter, this whole offense changes. And while Blake Bortles is probably a better pass thrower than Jordan Love at this moment, I don't know if the offense is going to reach upper echelons enough to push, you know, any sort of score. And this becomes one of the worst teams in football, which is great for fantasy because we know Bortles is great in garbage time. But I don't know if Amari, you know, fits the profile that's going to benefit the most from it, because he does his most, his best work is near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. It's path. Look, we've seen LaFleur get invented before. Yep. I think they absolutely can get creative enough to make Rodgers definitely somebody that is a valuable asset. But I'm with you. It's can he consistently, where his value lies is, can he consistently jump up and outperform an Alan Lazard or even a Valdez Scantling to crack that top three? He may.
I think it does. Like, I think the biggest concern is if they decide to keep Lazard as a big slot on three receiver sets and have MVS work outside, or if they'll let Lazard be pushed outside.
And Adams will slide in and play the slot some too. So
yeah, I mean, he'll do whatever the fuck he wants to.
Rodgers,
at this point,
Rodgers played some outside and some in the slot too. So, I mean, all three of these guys can move around a bit.
Yeah, it's like you said. It's going to depend on how much they want to get creative with Amari Rodgers' skill set.
Yep. Kylan Hill's draft capital was very disappointing to me as somebody I was high on and pounding the table for. He lands behind Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, which is kind of a death sentence for now. So,
yeah, you got to hope he gets cut. I mean, honestly,
it's hard to say that, but yeah.
He gets cut, and then he gets picked up and not practice squad
by a team with some opportunity because, yeah, I mean, landing behind Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon is not great unless somehow he finally finds primary pass-catching back work. But, I mean, again, this dovetails back to the Amari Rodgers discussion, who worked out of the backfield and definitely could be used in a Ty Montgomery type role in that regard too. So
yeah, I I'm not holding my breath. Unfortunately, it's someone who also liked.
I'm not either. So hope to see you there. No UDFAs to speak of on that front. Let's get to Minnesota, and I will let you lead that discussion.
Sure. So I believe that Minnesota had one of the best drafts in terms of what Spielman has been able to do relatively well throughout his tenure as Minnesota's GM. And that's just be a wizard with his draft picks, accumulating more and more value and being able to give Zimmer and the rest of these assistant coaches, these position coaches.
They definitely win for volume. Holy shit, that's a list.
He does this every single year, and they continue to find day three the way that Chicago does with their day three guys. Minnesota is just as good as finding production, high-end production with these guys. Obviously, Christian Darrisaw was their pick at 14. Trades with the Jets, and that nets two extra third-round picks this year and still gets their guy 9 picks later. That one of the best value picks outside of Justin Fields. You and I both love Kellen Mond. We don't need to get into much of that. He's not gonna
take it from
this year.
Cousins, but Cousins gets hurt.
He gets hurt. I don't want to see Mond take any snaps this year.
No.
Just even if Cousins gets hurt, I don't want to have to deal with that. But what this does is then point to 2022, where Cousins drafts, or not drafts, his contract balloons to 45 mil with its last share. And that's where true conversations speak out. You know, they bring in Wyatt Davis from Wild State, who many consider was a very, very good guard, who should also slot in with Therizel into the starting lineup. This should finally give Minnesota a potentially legit offensive line since, what, 2012? You know, during, you know, Peterson's MVP run.
Yeah.
Before homeboy from USC, you know, blew his load. You get the Iowa State speedster, Kenny, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. Between him and ISM from Iowa, the wide receiver, converted corner out of high school. Massive special teams guys. Both of them have a true shot of making their roster to fit both the kick return and the punt return roles. And ISM, Amir Smith-Marset, is a true threat to get the number three wide receiver slot, because all he has to do is beat out old BC Johnson and Chad Beebe. And, you know, Amir Smith-Marset is a speedster that can be at least a guy that can, you know, threat vertically. So I believe that Minnesota had, again, insane draft picks in terms of depth and being able to keep adding to their roster. So, and they, obviously, as you see, a lot of defensive pieces along the trenches, and Chaz Surratt should be there to replace, I think, Ben Godin.
Gideon?
Yeah. Ben Gideon as the third linebacker in that drill.
All right. So, Darisaw, first off, good pick. A lot of people expected him to go sooner. It was definitely a position in need for the Vikings. So, great grab there to go out and get him. Going down that list, Kenny Nwangu, I think.
That sounds right.
Exactly the type of back that the Vikings like to draft. I mean, he's a highly hyper athletic, and that's exactly what Mike Boone was. That's exactly what Jerick McKinnon was, is a hyper athletic back that didn't have a lot of productivity because he was hurt. This is exactly the type of pick that they typically make and make something out of, even if it is just a depth back that starts for a game or two. The Kellen Mond pick, look, Cousins is 34, 35 years old. He's regressing closer to league average than anything. He does have 2 years fully guaranteed left. But Mond's a high upside guy that needed a little bit of development as far as some of his on-the-run type stuff, some of his accuracy type stuff. I like the pairing. I like Kellen Mond a lot. I think that at some point in his NFL career, Kellen Mond is going to be a starter. Whether that's for Minnesota in 2 years, whether that's somewhere else, I don't know. But I think at some point, Kellen Mond is going to be a starter.
It's going to be very important for him to have positive. I mean, obviously, these guys want to have, you know, positive training camps and preseasons. But even for a guy like Mond, and for Minnesota's case, wanting him to always look progress, like they want to almost treat this like how the Patriots did with, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, and even like a Jacoby Brissett.
Rodgers was behind Favre for a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, and like if they can get value in moving on from a backup quarterback that they spent less draft capital on and gain more, that's a net win no matter what.
Oh, and he should be the backup easily. Jake Browning and Nate Stanley are the other two quarterbacks. He should easily take that spot. So, Amir Smith-Marset, the other one that we need to talk about a bit. Yes, the Vikings have longstandingly now had a hole at third wide receiver. From a team that runs as much as they do with a 1-2 punch of Madison and Cook, that third wide receiver's value remains to be seen as to what it is. I think it's probably closer to what the number two wide receiver on Detroit's value is going to be. but still not going to be great. It's going to be occasional flex value. And, you know, we had the same hopes for BC Johnson. So he's a guy to watch because, again, this is a thin wide receiver chart. you don't think of it as being that way because of how good Jefferson and Thielen are, but it is a thin wide receiver chart behind those two. So he's definitely something to watch. Watt Filor is not anything. Blake Prohl is not anything. He is the next best with Chad Beebe and BC Johnson, and they're going to be fighting it out for that third spot, for better or for worse. So, unless they pick up somebody off of a cut list later on.
Yep.
All right, pick the next division.
Let's go to the West.
Out West, we're going to start with the Arizona Cardinals, who fucked this whole thing up. All right. Zaven Collins, nobody had him as a first rounder, except for apparently the Cardinals. Rondale Moore is interesting for a team that has Christian Kirk, DeAndre Hopkins, and A.J. Green, because Rondale Moore is a guy we really, really liked, but man, does he feel like a duplicate piece to Christian Kirk.
There's one benefit to this. Moore, obviously, I don't think he gets much work year one.
I don't think he does either.
They're both free agents after this year. Moore is probably Christian Kirk's replacement.
He probably is, because
year
Kirk
two is what you're looking for.
Because Kirk hasn't done enough to justify a large extension or anything like that. He's been good. He's been good enough to stay on the field. He hasn't been fantasy good enough or productivity good enough to justify a large extension. So I agree with that. He's probably a year two replacement. But this is not, I think, when a lot of people were super high on Rondale Moore, and you had the Moore versus Moore discussions going on, that really came down to landing spot. Like, Elijah definitely came out on the upside of that one.
I like them both. Now, it's whether or not Cliff is going to get creative
with
Moore.
And more immediacy in a...
Yeah, but at least in an offense that, again, should be high volume, that spreads him out, his path to production, at least in the second year, maybe even this year, depending on how the rosters shake up.
Well, yeah, because if
not, like, he immediately could slot in and as starting slot receiver in year two.
If Fitz doesn't come back, if AJ Green has nothing left,
Fitz isn't even on. I don't think he's on their roster.
He's not. That's what I said. If he doesn't come back,
yeah,
because if he comes back, it's only going to be the Cardinals. And if AJ Green has nothing left, then yes, Rondale Moore's on the field. They'll find a way with him and Kirk. One of them will play outside. So,
I'm excited for it. We'll just have to. We probably just have to wait a year to see how it shakes.
It's another reminder that not all these guys will produce in year one.
Yep.
So if you like Rondale Moore and you don't get Rondale Moore in year one, go kick the tires on that after year one, because I don't think he's going to produce heavy this year. I'm with you on that. Beyond that, Marco Wilson is nothing. There's nobody else there from their draft class they need to talk about, really. They went corner, defensive end, corner, safety, center. They needed help on defense. They needed help on the line. None of those guys strike me as particularly, like, game changers. They may be something, but marginal. Yeah. They're not going to move the needle.
Only three undrafted, one of them a tight end, and we don't care about Arizona tight end. So
yeah, there's nobody. So they probably had the most meh to bad draft out of anybody.
Yeah, nothing to get too excited about outside of obviously Moore, but even then you have to wait a year to get that excitement. So
yeah, all right, on to the Rams.
Let's move on to a worse draft.
Are the Rams next in ABC order? Hold on. I don't think that's the case. I just went, what was it? Oh, they are. Because we got a San Francisco and Seattle. Yeah, this didn't get better.
Yeah, 2-2 Atwell.
2-2 Atwell.
Mr. 140 himself.
Don't know what they're going to do with him. They didn't learn anything from Tavon Austin. I don't know what they're going to do with him.
I don't even know what they're doing in general. This is, they're like, they're trying to be the new Cardinals and just waste draft picks on receivers that they don't use.
One pick I like is the Jake Funk pick. Again, another guy that I looked at that was older, that is hyper freaking athletic, if anything. We'll have to see if he makes the team. But hyper athletic on a team that's still looking for a lead back. So, I mean, it ain't going to be Jake Funk, but he could carve his way into some form of ancillary role because of his athleticism. If anything, maybe special teams. But definitely some form of ancillary role, again, from a team that doesn't have a lead back. So
Yes, and a team that doesn't have a lead back. I get it.
Yeah. That's shade at Cam Akers for anybody that doesn't get it.
You don't like Cam Akers. I know.
There's nothing else here to like. I didn't even scout Jacob Harris. Or Ben Skoranek. They did take an inside linebacker. They took a defensive tackle. They took, some defensive pieces.
God, it's a whole bunch of...
Just a whole bunch of nothing.
Ooze? Well, that makes it easy, though. And we know a lot of these guys aren't going to be much of anything because they'll likely draft the same position next year.
Right. Also, nothing in... Yeah, we're just going to move on. Good job, Rams. You'll still be good because you have Stafford and Cooper Kupp and...
Deshaun Jackson's there.
Deshaun Jackson and
Van Jefferson.
Van Jefferson and Bobby Woods and
oh god,
you'll be fine. San Francisco,
Seattle. Well, I guess it'll be San Fran.
Seattle. Depends on if you go by city name or by. They had three picks.
Who did? Oh, Seattle.
They had three picks.
Oh, perfect. We'll just go to Seattle.
Dwayne Eskridge.
I actually like this pick.
Okay, go for it. Because, yeah, go for it.
I mean,
it.
He fits a wide. I mean, I don't like where they drafted him, but.
Get your guy if you only got three picks.
I mean, if you can't trade back, obviously press against the clock. They couldn't make a deal done. You go get your guy, number three, Speedster, who's going to fit, who's going to, fill in nicely, as that third weapon. That third true deep threat, underneath the guy that can work alongside DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. Gerald Everett, obviously, there as well. Will Disley coming off of his 18th injury. It's probably a far better NFL pick than will be for fantasy.
Don't forget Chris Carson, the undisputed.
Chris Carson as well, the corpse of Rashad Penny, something named DJ Does Dallas. So,
let's talk about. These two UDFA wide receivers, though, Tamorian Terry and Cade Johnson.
Two more picks I get excited about. I love Tamorian Terry. I understand why he didn't get drafted because of the lawn off the field issues, but and same amount of upside with baby DK Metcalf, Tamorian Terry.
Yeah, and Seattle's taken on some of these before and not really had issues with them. Josh Gordon. Really comes to mind. But they've taken on some of those guys with off-field issues before. And remember, you have Lockett, you have Metcalf. Yes, Eskridge has the draft capital. It's wide open behind those guys, though. Tamorian Terry has a ton of talent. Ton of talent, if he can keep his nose clean. He's a huge wide receiver with a lot of athleticism that Seattle absolutely knows how to use. Baby Metcalf was a great way to put that, so... again, just if you're looking at the end of drafts, his opportunity is not quite as great from a UDFA perspective as the guys on Detroit, but his upside is higher than either of them. So,
he's got to make the roster.
Cade Johnson's the opposite. He's a smaller wide receiver that's hyper athletic that a lot of people liked. So, you just got to watch both of those guys. They're both guys that I think a lot of people in the fantasy community definitely had is, day two, day three picks, probably. So, just, again, another thing to watch. It's not the worst landing spot for wide receivers. That's Tampa. But it's not a great one.
I mean, at least for Cade Johnson's purposes, he was the main special teams guy for South Dakota State in
right.
the first couple of seasons. So, if there's a path to potentially getting onto the field and making the roster. Again, we always look at special teams I'm on the team, so if injuries start to occur, I'm immediately someone that they look at.
Yeah. San Francisco, their first four picks were solid. Start Trey Lance landing there and what that means for Garoppolo.
So this one's tough because you want to assume, a top three pick, you want to try to get him out there as soon as possible. But again, this feels like Garoppolo plays until he inevitably gets hurt, and then Lance you know, comes in and we'll see what he has at that point. He only has 17 career starts in college. I think it was 17. And it was in an FCS conference. It wasn't even in the main one. So it wasn't in the FBS. So there's a whole lot of time he needs to learn, you know, before I think he's ready. Well, you know, with Kyle Shanahan, with the offense that's built around him and Shanahan's ways to kind of fit the scheme to the players that he has, Lance's upside is as high as anyone of these top five QBs. So it's a great pick.
It's going to go the same way Dalton with the Bears does, to where, you know, Lance is starting by between week four and week six. Again, huge upside pick, small school guy. Definitely helped out a little bit by some of that small school competition, at least in the turnover department. Yeah. But huge arm, huge athleticism. I'd be surprised if he starts the season as a starter.
Yeah, I'd still be surprised if Lance starts this season, you know, barring a Garoppolo injury.
Mm-hmm. A couple other things they did. They go out and get a guard, which good for a team that likes to run the football. They actually took two, but one with high draft capital. Then Trey Sermon. So a lot of the discussion was, who's going to be the fourth running back off the board? Because we knew and ended up confirmed on this that you were going to have Harris, Etienne, Williams as the first three.
Yeah.
So who's the fourth running back off the board? And the answer to that was Trey Sermon, I think.
It was. He was. There was only four running backs taken in the first 2 days of the draft.
Yeah.
Sermon was the last one with the late pick.
Yeah. So third round, pick 25. Lands on a team that, well, we've seen year in and year out use four running backs. So that caps the upside a little bit, but damn, does it help the floor. And he's different than Mostert. And, you know, he's different than Gallman. He's more similar to what Jeff Wilson is as far as between the tackles and large. To me, he slots in as the third best back in this team, which is, again, in year one, a French flex type guy. I want to see him prove that he still runs as violent as he did at Ohio State. I want to see him prove that the vision is there, because I thought that was lacking a little bit on his film, but the burst definitely is, and he lands an opportunity.
Don't draft Trey Sermon in the first round of your rookie drafts.
If do not.
You draft Trey Sermon, he's a flip candidate. Trey Sermon is just a fucking guy. He's not an elite running back prospect, and I don't care if he landed in San Francisco where they just rotate backs, especially UDFAs, so draft capital tends to not matter. But Dan, Trey Sermon was the highest running back pick that Kyle Shanahan's ever spent. And yet, he continues to find production from day three in UDFA guys. I don't think it fucking matters that Trey Sermon got late day two draft capital. Does it mean he'll see the field at some point? Sure. See a better prospect than the guys that they could draft next year or in 2 years? Fuck no. Like, he's literally just a guy that got a okay landing spot that is going to create more nightmares for fantasy football, especially in redrafts.
And had a huge couple of games to throw the recency bias.
Yeah, he's
into
basically
overdrive.
Sony Michel'd his way. Like, he couldn't beat out Kennedy Brooks in Oklahoma. He couldn't beat out Stevenson, the rookie that
Ramondre
the
Stevenson,
Patriots got.
The Patriots rookie, yeah.
Yeah, like, and he couldn't beat out Master Teague, who's also, like, it's good for Sermon for getting high draft capital. Good for Sermon for making this happen. And yes, there's always chances we could be wrong. But to me, if he does have success and you have a 3 or 4 game stretch where he's all right,
you got
to
flip him.
Move him. You got to move him.
He's not. He doesn't profile. His college career doesn't say anything of this is a long term back. The workhorse we're gonna ride. It's flash in the pan. He will flash in the pan, especially given where he landed. You got to move him when that happens. San Francisco is San Francisco. It's going to be Mostert until he gets hurt. And then it's going to be Jeff Wilson, which is why I keep Jeff Wilson on a roster. And Trey Sermon's going to find his way in there some weeks, too. So,
good luck. Just don't, like, this is why I said fade all running backs after the top three. Just don't reach, don't trade up. If he's there for you in the early second, sure. Like, fine. Then move him when you can.
South or east?
East. We'll save the south for last. That'll be fun.
It will be fun. All right. Let's start with the Cowboys. How about them Cowboys?
How about them Dallas?
Just kidding, kind of. Micah Parsons, definitely a Dallas-style pick. All field problems galore. Huge athleticism. Sean Lee-type replacement. They didn't really do anything on offense. They didn't need to, necessarily, other than maybe try to help the line, but they just didn't do it. Kelvin Joseph out of Kentucky, cornerback help. Defensive tackle, defensive end, cornerback, inside linebacker. They didn't do anything on offense until their seventh pick.
I mean, which is probably the right move. Their offense considered top five.
It's very good.
Their defense is historically bad. So,
yeah.
It makes sense.
Right. Just doesn't give us a whole lot to talk about. They put a bunch, they put an infusion of talent into their offense, into their defense. We'll see how it shakes out. Micah Parsons should be a productive player if he keeps his nose clean. Kelvin Joseph, Jovi Owusu's not there anymore. He's going to get a chance. You know, it is what it is for them. Simi Fehoko, hyper-athletic guy out of Stanford, not a ton of productivity. He comes in the fifth round. Look, he's not going to challenge any of your top three there in Dallas with Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, or why am I forgetting CeeDee Lamb?
Yeah.
So
no, it's you know, three undrafted free agents, wide receivers, two running backs, a tight end.
Noah Brown's like, still hanging around, by the way.
Noah Brown. See? I was totally not wrong. He's still in the league somehow.
Yep. So they did take a bunch of UDFAs. So look, we all like Tony Pollard, Zeke. Jaquan Hardy, best small school running back in this draft, does have a chance to come in and compete for that third running back spot. Hyper productive, decently athletic, little bowling ball of a runner, definitely had breakaway speed, definitely good at breaking tackles. But again, he did it all in D2, so he has a chance as far as UDFAs go. You know, the wide receivers don't leave a whole lot there that I like in TJ Vasher, Brandon Smith, or Osiris Mitchell. So, and they don't need to, given this roster. So, I mean, really, the only spot when you look up and down the Cowboys roster that you're looking at and saying, well, maybe they need depth here, is that third running back spot, which is why Jaquan Hardy comes up behind Zeke and Pollard. Other than that, they're in pretty good shape offensively.
Yeah, that's going to be, if healthy, that's going to be a good offense.
Yep, and if the defense takes a step, they've got to be favored to win that division.
Yeah, the NFC East is not the NFC East of last year, folks. It's going to be a hell of a lot better.
But the Giants are still the Giants.
Yeah. Woo. Hey, they traded down. They got an extra first-round pick. Fantastic for the Giants. How are they going to fuck up pick 20? Hopper, how did they fuck up pick 20?
Kadarius Toney.
Kadarius fucking
They needed
Tony.
A wide receiver that didn't profile like Golden Shepherd, and they went out and took Kadarius Toney. a guy whose best attribute is that he could be a hell of a gadget, and he's hyper-athletic in the slot. He'll break your ankles with his agility, but he is not a one. Now, Kenny Golladay is there. Does he need to be a one? I don't, you know.
No.
He could play the other outside receiver spot, leaving Shepard in the slot. He could slide into the slot. I think he could be a solid complimentary piece. You don't spend a first-round draft pick on complimentary pieces, though. This is a knock on draft capital, not on Kadarius Toney, the prospect.
I mean, prospect, I don't really, I mean,
you didn't again, like the prospect anyway, right? But even you admitted there was upside in athleticism to the prospect if he was deployed in the right way.
I mean, sure. I mean, that's the issue with gadget players. It's like the NFL has yet to show us that they can deploy these type of players consistently with confidence that we, you know, can, you know, palm the, you know, p- pound the table for from a fantasy standpoint. Look, Tony's best fantasy year might come from this season.
He's a more agile Curtis Samuel, in my opinion. And Gettleman, yeah. I think, drafted Curtis Samuel. So
Gettleman has to, in some way, shape, or form, like, defend this pick by manufacturing touches for Tony in year one. Mm-hmm. Like, Tony has a chance to be fantasy relevant this season. Like, you know, Darius Slayton's just a guy. Golden Tate's gone. Sterling Shepard is just a misused piece that's often injured.
I'm looking at some other guys on their roster, though. First off, John Ross is nothing. He's apparently there now. Dante Pettis and David Sills.
And they work, and they're working out Kelvin Benjamin. It's just
cluster.
It makes this pick even more of a head scratch.
And like, Daniel Jones is
tilting. He wanted Devonta Smith, and Philadelphia leapfrogged them.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole thing was Gettleman does the right thing and moves back because he didn't get his guy. And then, like, he rage picks Kadarius Toney, like, because for some reason he got first round value. Like, I get it. He can do a lot after the catch, but why are we drafting him? Like, why are we drafting the player?
You
got to
separate and get the catch first.
Yeah, Dan, you play you played quarterback out of high school, and they barely used him. Like, they made him a true utility player until his senior season. Like, I don't care. Like, he dominated against 18-year-olds at 22 years old. Like, I'm not that impressed if your best season by a large margin is your senior season.
Yeah, I look good when I play disc golf against a bunch of 14-year-olds, too. So, I mean, I've never done that, and I probably don't, but it's an accurate comparison, maybe.
I can dominate 8-year-olds on the basketball court on an 8-foot hoop. Like,
that's what this is.
That's not impressive. And what Tony did, not impressed. I'm not impressed. So,
David Sills, by the way, there's a name.
Is he still there?
Oh, yeah, he's there. He's a guy that I actually liked a decent amount, too. He's a good slot guy. Christ.
The Giants are now hoarding receivers.
And Dante Pettis. They got Dante Pettis, too.
The Giants are hoarding receivers the way Chicago hoarded tight ends.
Yeah.
I don't think this ends well for anybody besides Galladay.
Yeah, Shepard could be okay.
I don't even think it ends well for him because of Tony.
I think it ends better for him with Tate not being there. I don't
think Daniel Jones throwing the football.
Yeah, Daniel Jones throwing the football is the biggest problem. Let's not gloss over that.
Like, oof, Giants, this is going to be another long year.
Oh, they got Taquan Mizell on their roster, too. I remember him, former Bears depth piece. This Giants roster is just a treasure trove of freaking names that shouldn't still be on rosters.
At least their defense is great.
Levine Toilolo.
Saquon Barkley back.
They have Levine Toilolo. No? Nothing?
I know, but
Joe Webb, Dan. Joe Webb is there.
He started a playoff game.
As is Mike Glennon. Holy hell. Devontae
Giants.
Booker?
It's got the castaway. They have Devontae. Oh, my God. This have all the
it's
names.
Like the island of wayward toys.
No, this is great.
Holy hell.
Giants might now become my third favorite team.
I want to watch them to see what scrub is getting playing time. By the way, Azeezy Ojulari, good pick. I hate to say it, but
it was
218. They get a pass rusher with some decent upside.
That defense is going to be good.
That was a good pick. That defense will be good.
I think it's going to be a lot better.
And Barkley coming back does help, but
Daniel Jones is still going to find a way to lead the league in turnovers.
Despite
his only job is to hand off the ball to Barkley and throw some
defense. He's got, it's like the goodwill of skill players, though.
He's going to Jared Goff his way into a
it's new the goodwill of skill players, and Kenny Galladay and Saquon Barkley are the two like awesome things you find in the goodwill. And because, you know, there's always one or two cool finds you get there. And then everybody else is just,
they have the Sam's Club of wide receivers.
They just went and bought a combo pack.
Just bulk. Like, I thought I'd get a discount if I brought in enough receivers. Right? You know, I signed five. I get the sixth one for free.
It's a six pack of AirPods. It's a six pack of AirPods off of Apple or off of Amazon. They're actually all Chinese knockoffs.
Oh my God!
I mean,
Pod Airs.
Yeah, the Pod Airs.
The Pod Airs. The Chinese knockoff.
I mean, David Sills is Chinese knockoff Cooper Kupp.
Okay, I'm done talking about who's next? The Eagles? Eagles.
I think the Eagles, yeah.
The Eagles. We're going to the Eagles.
We should start every show off with a loosen it up jug.
Oh, my God.
That was totally the wrong website. I'm on their depth chart now, just in case you're wondering.
All right. So, first pick, Devonta Smith. They moved and they traded with Dallas to leapfrog the Giants. It's like
the enemy of my enemy is a friend.
It's my friend.
Because Dallas doesn't need a wide receiver. So.
Oh, this is great.
They take Devonta Smith, reunite him with Jalen Hurts, which is, you know,
a story.
It's a story. Look, this is good. They needed upside at wide receiver. They went out and got Devonta Smith, who, you know, the biggest knock on Devonta Smith is his weight and how much is he going to hold up. There's the talent's undeniable. So I don't hate the pick at all. And he lands in a spot where he absolutely should be the one.
Oh, easily. Like, depending on how Hurts progresses in a full offseason as a starter with no one breathing down its neck. I like this move even more so for Jalen Reagor, who now gets to move back into
where he should
natural slot role. Like, again, this is going to all fall on how Hurts and how the offense wants to use, like, how much Hurts is going to pass the football. And can he, you know, become a more efficient passer with now a time to be really acclimated into the NFL. We know how good Hurts is going to be for fantasy because of his rushing floor. He now has weapons galore from his receivers, good tight ends, Miles Sanders, their fifth round pick, Kenneth Gainwell, who again went too late.
We talked a lot about Gainwell in the intro.
We don't need to talk about Gainwell. We don't need to rehash that. And those are the only two, despite Landon Dickerson, those are the three offensive players that they drafted.
Which Dickerson coming in also, by the way, a good boost to that interior offensive line, which had been, that offensive line's been aging. And for a team that wants to run the football, Dickerson was a good pickup there. Devonta Smith, though, he's going to be the one. There's not anything challenging him for that. And it does allow Jalen Reagor to move to a more natural position. So could help both of them. We'll see what he can do. His upside to me is a wide receiver too in year one. I don't think that he's going to come out and light the world on fire. I think he will be productive.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
So, he's fine. I think that the landing spot doesn't move your needle on him a whole lot. Nor should it. No. You're still going to have the concerns you have, but he landed in the role that he should have landed in, given his college productivity.
Yep.
Gainwell, we talked about. They did a little bit to address some things on defense as well, where they were pretty bad. Moving on.
Jamie Newman, they bring in as a UDFA quarterback.
Right, so moving on.
I'm just saying, if something happens to Hurts, it leaves Newman, who has to compete with Flacco, and at least carry on that offense.
I was going to say, have you forgotten Joe Flacco?
I try to every day.
He won you a Super Bowl.
He did. And that defense, the lights, despite the lights going out.
The disrespect.
I know. I love Joe Flacco. Come on now. You know this.
All right. Washington football team. Jamin Davis, good pick at linebacker. The rich get richer on defense. You know, the thing you wanted to see them do was probably address some of the offensive pieces a little bit more. This is a team that a lot of people thought they would go out and, I think, address the quarterback position, and they didn't do it.
They picked from 19. they weren't as aggressive as Chicago to move up to try to take Justin Fields. Maybe they tried. They just didn't offer enough. The problem with Washington is that this roster and the complementary pieces are getting better, and the defense is very, very good, that it's going to become harder and harder for them to have a chance to draft a franchise quarterback. This is a team to watch out for, like they did with Ryan Fitzpatrick this year. And they're going to keep trying to probably bring in veteran QBs and hopefully hit on something the way that I guess Minnesota hit on Kirk Cousins, kind of.
Right. There are some good things and there are some knocks here. Deami Brown is a great pickup, I think. He looks every bit the part of an NFL receiver. Very fluid, very athletic, large receiver. He's going to slot in as a good complement to Terry McLaurin. He's not going to threaten him for number one reps, but he is going to give them the number two receiver that they definitely desperately needed. Third-round draft capital, it really insulates that. He's not going to be leaned on to be a one. He will be a nice complimentary piece. And I think he complements McLaurin well in the fact that he's at least a more solid route runner, but he is still very fluid and athletic. I think that for Deami Brown truthers, you're very happy with where he landed here. And I think it does solidify Brown as probably a second-round draft pick, given third-round draft capital and everything else that's out there that is a little ugly. You know, mid to late, sure, but I think it solidifies Brown as a second-round draft pick.
I like this pick with this pairing with Ryan Fitzpatrick and the bullishness. Brown, I think he had 20.2 yards per reception.
Yeah,
it was
some huge number.
With North Carolina, he's a massive deep threat that's going to let – you know, McLaurin worked naturally as the X and let Brown work vertically. And with Fitzpatrick and his fuck it ball, Brown's in for probably some nice games, not the worst best ball pickup and, you know, towards the end of your drafts.
Speaking of wayward toys, Dylan Cantrell and Adam Humphries sitting on this roster.
I believe Cantrell, I think he converted to tight end.
He's
correct?
Listed as a wide receiver now again.
Okay.
He was hyper athletic. He was definitely Adam Humphries.
Adam Humphries, that's right.
Who is one concussion away from being done.
And he'll still be their slot receiver because they have nothing else there.
They don't. Well, Curtis Samuel. So maybe we'll
They brought it. Yeah, that's right.
So
paired back up with Ron Rivera.
Yep. Jermaine Davis, good pick. Like I said, the rich just got richer there. You looked at everything they did well. From the pass rush position, they bring in a guy now to help solidify that linebacker, which I think they needed to bring in some talent there. I thought John Bostic and the other linebackers last year were definitely overperforming.
Yep.
A lot thanks to that insane front four. So it definitely helps solidify a need there. As far as, you know, the secondary, they got better, a little bit better there as well. So
that defense is going to have to be on top of his game. You know,
the defense is going to be what wins in games. Well,
the Dallas and Eagles twice a year.
Right. And if Dallas is the favorite and the Eagles could show the most improvement, Washington's could finish anywhere from first to third in this division, depending on how the offense performs. It's not going to be because of the defense, but the defense is what won them that division last year. They didn't do enough on offense. No disrespect to Deami Brown. They needed a quarterback, and I thought that they needed some running back depth behind Antonio Gibson. And they
brought one in UDFA. So, I mean, I thought they did the right move.
What, Jarrett Patterson?
I'm not saying, like,
first off,
UDFA, fine. Jarrett Patterson as a guy like Brendan off the street, no draft capital, fine. Do what you will. You got Devin Singletary, who was a third-round pick. They got almost a better Devin Singletary and Patterson, at least, and not having to draft him. Like,
I don't know about that.
Well, that's fine, but they also didn't spend day two draft capital on another running back, which I think is great.
Well, you didn't have to spend day two draft capital to get somebody better than Jarrett Patterson. You could have spent seventh-round draft capital to get somebody better than Jarrett Patterson.
Yeah.
I mean, you got nobody behind Antonio Gibson, and Jarrett Patterson to me is not better than...
You mean to tell me that J.D. McKissick, Peyton Barber...
The answer is yes. That's exactly...
The course of Lamar Miller isn't death behind... behind Antonio Gibson.
I am saying that, yes, it's not depth behind Gibson, and I am saying that they could all probably beat out Jarrett Patterson.
I don't care about Patterson. I don't care about
I hate
back.
Jarrett Patterson. No. You got me going. Now we're going to talk about why I hate Jarrett Patterson.
No, I don't want another Kalen Ballage on this.
There is a running back I have to hate, and I hate Jarrett Patterson out of this class.
At least he wasn't a draft pick, so I don't have to hear about him beyond this season.
Literally, my con on him was, oh, good, this year's Kalen Ballage, because he had an 8-touchdown game. You make the comparison jokingly. I made the comparison seriously.
Well, he's not Kalen Ballage. At least Ballage has got size and speed. He's dumb as a box of rocks, but at least he looks like a starting running back. At least he looks like a big running back. Patterson's, what, 5'9", buck 85? Well, didn't catch a pass because they didn't target him at all because Buffalo's passing offense was god atrocious.
Look, I had a note on Jarrett Patterson that said if this were porn and not football, he would be fired for hitting the wrong hole as much as he does.
He didn't have to pick any holes. They were always fucking open for him.
And he still missed them. You'd be laying there spread eagle, and he's going to end up in your ear somehow.
I still stand by that he is just Devin Singletary, now without draft capital. And thank fucking God, because I don't have to now talk about him.
You're still going to talk about him every time his name comes up because he's dog shit, and I'm going to make sure people don't forget it.
That's fine. You mark my word. I'll just keep making fun of... I wish he would have landed in Buffalo so he can beat out Singletary.
He wouldn't. I don't think he would have.
I think he would have.
I'd have to decide if I hated him or Zach Moss more.
At least Zach Moss will be... At least we'll have a running back who will get enough touches for us to argue about it to start sit every week. Oh, just kidding. We don't talk start sits. I don't have to talk about any of that.
No, thank God. We'll talk about them if they're relevant. I'm not going to talk about them just to talk about them.
Talk about the NFC South, or do we got to talk more about Washington?
There's nothing else to talk about, really. They added some pieces to their defense, and that was most of it. I don't think they did enough on offense to stay competitive in this division. I think what the Cowboys did on defense helps them more than what Washington did on offense. Let's put it that way.
Let's just hope Washington will suck enough this year they can get a competent quarterback, because at least the depth of the quarterback class next year is there. There's just no Lawrence or Fields, or in your case, Wilson.
Okay. On to Atlanta. Kyle Pitts, obviously, hell of an add to that offense. Matt Ryan should still be considered a top 8 fantasy quarterback, even without the athletic upside, because, my God, does he once again have weapons.
And a bad defense and a whole lot of passing volume to come around.
Uh-huh, and no running game. So, first off, good on that, because there's going to be plenty of passing volume here. And Kyle Pitts is going to get his. Now, Kyle Pitts is going as high in redraft as pick 57, which is a fifth-round pick for a rookie tight end. And while I completely believe in Kyle Pitts' upside, you look at the rookie tight ends of the past that have had a huge athletic profile, and everybody's like, holy shit, they're the next big thing. And everybody will deny it now. But I was there for T.J. Hockenson. I was there for Mike Gesicki. I was there for Noah Fant.
I was there for Evan Engram.
David Njoku. Like, all the disrespect to George Kittle, and I hit on him. Let's not forget that.
Trust me, you'll never let us.
I won't. But, you know, it's out of control on Kyle Pitts. I love Kyle Pitts. The ADP on Kyle Pitts is out of control. I even think him going at the rookie 103, 104 is a little out of control.
In for Dynasty, it's
single
whatever.
Tight end.
Though? I wouldn't pass Chase, Etienne, or maybe Harris for him.
No. And if you take him as a 6 or a 7, it makes sense. That's more in line with where your top tight ends have gone the last couple of years.
But, I get why. I do. He's the highest drafted tight end in the NFL draft ever. So, like, there's clearly he's going to get volume as early as year two. He may get it this year. Fuck it. They do find a trade partner for Julio Jones, which I don't think they will, because drafting Kyle Pitts at pick four suggests you're trying to go all in. Otherwise, you wouldn't take a tight end there. They still shouldn't have taken a tight end there, but it's whatever.
Well, what they have here is a mismatch problem, though, too, because you still have to cover Julio and Ridley.
It's that's like you hit the nail with Matt Ryan this year. Like, Pitts is probably still going to be a productive rookie tight end. He's just not, like, there's no need to draft him high in redraft. There's no need for him to go as high as he's going in best ball. It's comical, because you need him to have an historic and beyond historic rookie season for him to be productive.
You know what else is weird here? They can run 12.
I don't know why you... I mean, they could. I mean, I would love to see him, to see them move Pitts inside and outside. I want them to use Pitts,
and that's what I'm saying.
Saints use Jimmy Graham.
Because you look at this roster in, okay, Julio and Calvin, you're not taking them off the field, right?
God, no.
Yep. But you don't have to if you run 12 personnel. You can run two wide receivers in 12. You take the third wide receiver out.
I mean, I would just have Pitts move inside. Like
you just have him play the, you have him play the slot and let Hayden Hurst play the traditional tight end position.
Or you can do have fun and you move Pitts outside and you have Calvin really be a mismatch in the slot. Speed slot.
And you still have
Hayden, have a lot of fun with this offense.
And you still have Hayden Hurst play the tight end position. Or if you need to block, you've got one of the best blocking tight ends in Lee Smith. Yeah. So
it's
there's a lot of fun they can have with this offense and the way that they're going to move people around, given the tight end combination that they have with the wide receivers. It's still, if Pitts is on the field, you're still in 12.
Yep.
But, you know, put him out there.
And
Because the combination of Pitts, Hurts, Ridley, and Julio is a receiving core. Gives you a lot more than having Russell Gage, Greg Dortch, Alamidi Zacchaeus, or Christian Blake on the field. Now, biggest survivor from this draft class is Mike Davis.
I'd argue Myles Gaskin.
I mean, my only knock against Gaskin is even though he survived the draft class, you still have a productive Salvin Ahmed behind him as well. And what's behind Mike Davis is Quadri Olison, James Brooks, Javian Hawkins, and Caleb Huntley.
Yeah, but at least Gaskin's got dynasty value, hopefully beyond this year.
Yeah, Mike Davis,
29?
Doesn't. I'm talking about Davis more redraft.
I know. I know you are.
Than anything else, but I mean.
But either way.
Yeah, as far as a running, like, this running back, it's Mike Davis in Atlanta. Somehow.
Hawkins, at least as a UDFA, I thought this was actually a good signing as someone in one of the worst running back backfields in football, even with Mike Davis there. Hawkins has a chance to carve out a number two role and at least give you some production from the undrafted, you know, free agent spot.
Well, and yeah, potentially. I don't love Javian Hawkins, but you can't argue with the fact that given that running back stable, it's anyone's game. If any of these guys, hell, it could be Tony James Brooks, and I don't even know who the hell that is. But any of these guys could break in. So, moving on.
Yep. Who's next? Carolina.
Carolina. J.C. Horn, good pick at cornerback. Little surprising you went ahead of Surtain.
So should it take Justin Fields, but I will always
this say. This is okay, though. Those cornerbacks this year were, if, let me put it this way. If quarterback was one of the deepest positions in this class, cornerback was a close second as far as top-end talent.
Yeah, but franchise quarterback brings more value to your franchise than even a franchise defensive back. Like you should lock down. Like, I get why they didn't take Fields or take back Jones. I just again, I would have done.
Well, this has got to tell you what they feel about Sam Darnold, who's still young and had enough working against him in New York to maybe they haven't written him off as potentially.
What's good about Carolina being is that this conference and in this division is so strong that they'll likely finish high up again to get a chance to take someone not as good as Fields.
I mean, they have their future here in Will Greer. No. But, you know, it just, if we're talking about people like Mike Davis that came out of the draft good, Sam Darnold came out of the draft good from a dynasty perspective.
Oh, God. They, you know, they take Terrence Marshall, second round, fantastic value. Hopefully the injury, you know, reports stay, you know,
small because.
And he can beat it because
he would be a hell of a 1-2 punch with DJ Moore. And
just, oh.
And I think his upside is higher than what Robbie Anderson is. So,
easily.
To me, Marshall could easily end the year as the two on this team with DJ Moore, and that is a hell of a 1-2 punch, especially with Robbie Anderson's your three. It's a good top three.
It's a good receiving core. You get, you know,
it is
a fully healthy Christian McCaffrey. You and I both don't like Chuba Hubbard. He's a solid backup, at least better than what they had. With the loss of Mike Davis.
And he is, and if they can block at all, which they do have, I mean, the offensive line's not great, but if they can block at all for him, then yeah, he does have the ability to definitely chunk some yardage and stuff. He just doesn't get up to speed very quick.
They can space out that field with three, you know, field stretchers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Ian Thomas up the scene. There's ways they can really space out.
And give Hubbard room to work. And if you give him room to work, like, he takes longer to get going, but once he gets going, he's as dangerous as anybody. So.
Yep, exactly.
You know, I don't mind the Hubbard ad. Tommy Tremble behind Dan Arnold and Ian Thomas is something. You know, it's not something you're going to run out and draft or anything like that. This tight end class is not great, but. You know, he has at least a chance to make the roster. And then, you know, he's also a third-round pick. So they put a little bit of draft capital into Tommy Tremble as well. So there's definitely some opportunity there. Does have more draft capital invested than Ian Thomas does. So
he's also, it looks like he plays that multi-positional role, too. Like,
yes.
The way that, like, Kittle did, you know, coming out of Iowa. Tremble at least could lead block for, you know, for McCaffrey and those power eyes.
So
he can do a lot more for that team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll ever be anything for fantasy-wise, but this is probably a very good pick.
It's a name to know if you're looking at dart throws and you're in need of a tight end, if you're a rebuilding team or something like that, given the, you know, look, it's not a tight end-heavy class. Once you get behind Freiermuth and...
they lied to us.
Yeah.
Everybody lied to us about this tight end class.
So Tommy Tremble having the draft capital he does is a guy you can pick up in your third or fourth round if you're a rebuilding team and you need tight end help.
Someone worth drafting in rookie drafts in two tight end or tight end premium leagues. So,
yeah. Well, even single tight end, like I said, when you get into rounds three or four, if you need a tight end and you're drafting for a positional need, then
I hope you're not drafting one. Just Freiermuth and Pitts are gone. These guys are going to just be turning around like butter and dropped. So,
Shai Smith's a guy some people liked. I was not a fan. So,
love it. And UDFA-wise...
I do anything? I didn't see anything, I don't think.
A couple running backs. So
hey, you don't disrespect the punter like that.
I said a couple running backs of note. We didn't...
Hey, can you tell me that punter's name?
Oscar Dragovich.
Dragushevich?
Dragusevich.
Dragusevich. I really hope he's actually their punter because I want that name to stick around.
I want him. I hope. You know what I hope he looks like? He's got that, like, evil villain mustache.
Who is their punter right now?
Oscar Dilla.
Something called a Joseph Charlton. So, I mean, look, Oscar Dragusevich has a chance to make this roster.
Sounds like the villain that would be of the punter that's on this roster now. What a great story.
He sounds like
I want to follow the storyline.
He sounds like the villain in a Mighty Ducks movie.
He's the villain of the punter that they have now. What's the punter's name?
Oscar Charlton. No, not Oscar Charlton. Joseph Charlton.
He sounds like a British spy. And Oscar...
Now that's definitely,
Vic is
it's definitely Russian, dude. That's either a Karate Kid villain or a Mighty Ducks villain.
Well, Mighty Ducks was what? Swedes? No, Irish. It was Ireland that they faced in D2.
Oscar, I gotta look up this guy's picture. Oscar Dragoose.
There is a picture.
Oh, there is.
Oh, there it is. He's American. He's an ex-soccer player. Oh, he looks too pretty.
He actually doesn't look like a villain anymore.
I know. He looks too pretty.
I ruined it. I shouldn't have gone. Holy God, he's ripped, too.
Yeah, I know. He's like this. He's the smaller Pat McAfee. He's not.
Nah, he doesn't have the personality.
That we know of.
I mean, I shouldn't have looked him up because the name had me just thinking like evil badass, but the face definitely says, I'm the dream guy for your daughter.
I'm the guy that she's really thinking about. That's going to be his nickname.
But I'll also have her home on time.
Yeah. he'll wear his shirt tucked in, shake the father's hand with the proper handshake, compliment the mom by saying, is this your sister? And then she'll go,
show up with Mother's Day gifts.
Win you over.
Be polite. Wears a suit while the family functions.
He'll try your drink at the bar to make sure that no one drugged it. Like, he's that guy. Like, he's...
But with a villainous name, so we'll probably go back and forth on him.
That's fine.
Thank you. Your undrafted punter analysis.
If you made it this far, you get the greatest punter analysis.
Your undrafted punter analysis brought to you by us.
Okay. Who's next?
Who's next?
It'd be what?
New Orleans. So,
not much.
Not much.
Ian Book, the Taysom Hill backup.
Yep. The Jameis Winston. No. Because Taysom Hill is the Jameis Winston backup.
Ian Book is just a smaller version of Taysom Hill.
Yeah, and probably won't do nearly as much. They do anything in UDFAs? Because if not, then we're just not going to talk about them.
They something named Stevie Scott from Indiana and another tight end. So, no.
Nope.
There's a punter, but his name's not at school.
Nah, that punter has a shit name. Not worth talking about.
not worth discussing. Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay. Joe.
Kyle Trask. Here's your boy.
Kyle Trask. Hey. He'll be Tom Brady's replacement in 10 years. He won't be. He'll compete for a backup spot. I mean, if it's an offense that's using Tom Brady, it's probably an offense that can use Kyle Trask, honestly.
I mean, he gets so long.
Trask is a little bit more mobile, but...
I mean, you and I are a little bit more mobile than Brady, so that's true. Much.
But, yeah, it's fine. He'll compete for a backup. Plus, second-round pick. He probably...
I like this spot for Trask, because Trask, only one season of high-end production, and at least he gets to sit and
learn.
First.
Yeah.
And learn behind.
And potentially learn behind
Tom Brady.
And may not even beat out Blaine Gabbert to start. He should. But, he'll get to sit and learn behind Tom Brady. And if and when Brady does retire, nobody knows when that'll happen. It's at least somebody Tampa can turn in and look at. He's decently he's athletic enough for today's NFL. He did have decent productivity in college. So, I said athletic enough. I didn't say it was hyper athletic. I saw you shaking your head. He had some rushing productivity, which says athletic enough.
If you think Kirk Cousins is athletic enough, then so is Kyle Trask.
I mean, Cousins will rush every now and again, so yeah, I do.
They both got the dad bods down, and they both.
So does McCorkle.
Trask. Oh. Including this is totally including McCorkle.
Well,
McCorkle,
that's
from this.
So, shout out to whoever was with me on this. I can't remember. I think it was Shane.
It was Shane. It was totally Shane.
I actually had Kyle Trask a little bit ahead of McCorkle from a prospect.
You and Shane were, yeah. You guys are both
from a prospect. Or
here, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't have him ahead of McCorkle, but I had of. I don't think that they're that much different. So, and I still don't. I don't think that they're that much different. The Patriots, it's you know, Trask is a second round pick, McCorkle is a first round pick. One lands in a position to immediately start if Cam Newton shits the bed. The other one's dependent on Tom Brady. Look, they're still not that far apart from me.
McCorkle will start this year.
McCorkle will start, yes.
Basically, McCorkle is Kyle Trask with first round DC.
But in 5 years, we'll see. Actually, in 5 years, Trask is probably a free agent and Tom Brady is still in Tampa.
Yeah. No pressure for Trask to do anything because we'll see what happens.
Hey, what'd you think of your beer?
Should probably talk about that. Yeah, we don't need to talk about Tampa Bay more.
I don't think we do. I'll look for punters with cool names. Jalen Darden's not a guy I care about.
You got a kicker.
They got a kicker.
Jose. Out of Miami. Jose. Oh, man.
Jose Borgalis. That's what I'm going with.
I see the two R's, and I get thrown off if it's going
to
make the...
I'd try to roll my tongue, but it would be embarrassing.
Or is it Bragas? Yeah. Anyways, beer.
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 Tennessee got a punter with the most generic name ever.
I'm just thoroughly don't care about punters because of
his name's
of
James
Oscar.
Smith. Yes, Oscar. Gershuvitz.
Beer. I am drinking Hubbard's Cave Cinnamon Mice Mocha. This is a stout with cinnamon, chocolate, coffee, lactose, vanilla beans. Heavy coffee on the aroma, heavy coffee on the mouthfeel. You get a bit of the chocolate, vanilla, and lactose on that same mouthfeel, which kind of helps to balance out the coffee notes throughout. It's got a lighter base body than I would assume from a stout. It's not as thick as I would have expected from it, but I don't know if adding in that many adjuncts would have potentially changed that. Overall, it's all right. It's not my favorite. Hubbard's generally heads about a 60% hit rate when it comes to their stouts. So this one just didn't quite make the mark, but it's definitely drinkable. Pretty good cinnamon, too.
Sorry, I got a credit line increase on my Chase card while we were doing this episode.
Hey!
Apparently they were listening and just really liked me. This is a punter analysis, I bet.
It's got to be.
So I had Royal Rush from Hysteria Brewing Co. The way this label is, sorry, I'm not being dumb. The way this label is makes it really hard to tell what the brewing name is and what to me and what the beer name is. And maybe it's just me, but Hysteria is the brew company. If you're on YouTube, you can see this. But Royal Rush is the beer name. But the way that they're intertwined makes it really hard for me to tell what's what. Hence the pause.
I do like that can art.
It's very simple. There's also...
He's got the guy that looks like a cartoon character from...
I don't know what that is, but he's drinking a protein shake for some reason.
So he's a bro. Perfect.
And he's in a green car that says coffee on it. Anyway, this is the Oscar Dragushevich of beers.
So it looks handsome. It tastes handsome, but has an evil name.
Yeah, it looks handsome, as in it's just a good color. It tastes pretty good. There's a good amount of coffee, a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of cinnamon there. It doesn't remind me of coffee cake, other than the fact that when I think coffee cake, I think coffee and cinnamon, and this is also coffee and cinnamon. So I guess in the sense that coffee and cinnamon equals coffee cake, this beer reminds me of coffee cake. Did that make any sense? Because
it did.
Yeah, because coffee cake has more to it than just coffee and cinnamon. They're just the first two things that come to mind. You could have just called this a venti cinnamon dolce beer, and it probably would have had the same effect. But, yeah, overall, cinnamon spicy notes on it were a little heavy at first. It almost tasted like a peppered beer. So definitely a ton of cinnamon here. Does fade into a decent amount of sweetness. The coffee takes the back seat. But is theirs. It fades into a nice bitterness, a little bit of coffee finish. Overall, it's sweet. It tastes like a hangover. And it's 8%, which I'm definitely feeling. So,
love it. Absolutely.
Thank you guys for tuning in. I have no freaking clue what we're doing next week. Take care. Beerfield Fantasy Football.
Bye.
Twitter. Beerfield FF, Hop BFF, Thurry BFF.
Two P's, two F's.
It's Beerfield with two E's.
Four E's.